tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground. This is a place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Good day, everyone. Thank you again for joining. This is another wonderful episode that we're going to have today. So today, I'm going to do something a little bit different today from my previous shows. You know, I'm an author. I have plenty of books that I've written so far on Amazon. Right. So this book right here, The Black Godmother, today I'm going to talk about this book that I've written. So the reason why I decided to write a book like this was because, you know, the book is actually set in the 1980s during the height of the crack epidemic, where, you know, back in my neighborhood, where the dope dealers, the drug dealers ran things. It happened between Maryland and D.C. So yeah, a lot of back then, like dope dealers, you know, ran things back then. So I decided, you know what, though, for years, I wanted to do a book like this because, you know, as a young kid, when I was young, right, I used to love a lot of gangster movies like Scarface, of course, Colors, New Jack City, Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, Goodfellas, The Godfather, of course, those type of movies. So, you know, there was this one rapper that I used to listen to all the time. His name is Gangsta Nip. And he had a song called The Black Godfather. So I was like, you know what? He's such a vivid rapper. I'm like, you know what? That song could actually be turned into a book or a movie. So for years, I've been thinking about writing a book like this. So when I was starting to think about the title of the book now, I was like, every time we watch these gangster movies or these type of movies, they're always a male gangster, right? But very rarely you see a female gangster. That's why I decided to do The Black Godmother. Because I know even back then, they had females who were in the streets like as hard as a lot of these males, okay? So, without further ado, some more, I'm going to get started, okay? So, this book follow the life of Naomi Davis. So, Naomi's life had changed forever after witnessing her parents' drug-related death. So, as a young child, when she was 5 years old, Naomi Davis witnessed two drug addicts murder her parents. And these guys were actually high off PCP back then. And she witnessed as a young kid. So after she witnessed that, of course, it changed her life forever. And now here comes her grandmother Ruth, who became her caregiver, instilling discipline and spiritual values within her. Because, you know, even back in those days, you know, the grandparent always trying to instill, you know what I'm saying, religious, spiritual values within their family. And that's what her grandmother did, you know. When she witnessed her parents' murder at 5 years, imagine you're a child, a five-year-old child, and you witness the murder of your parents, the unaliving of your parents. How will that mess with your psyche? A lot. It will mess with your psyche a lot, even as you get older. That's something a person would never forget. So, as she got older, Naomi finds comfort and escape in running track. So track was her go-to thing, just to get her mind off things, off her parents' murder, even when she was a young child, right? So running track, you know, because even as she got older, some days she would think about, she'd feel depressed, and she would be thinking about the murder of her parents. You know, sometimes she'd have conversation with her grandmother about her parents, and he just kept messing with cycles for track. And she was actually a good student in school. She really was. in this book. So she had two childhood friends by the name of Layla and Jordan. Now, these girls were her emotional anchors to her. You know, whenever sometime besides her grandmother, whenever she needs someone to talk to, I'll just joke around and have fun with, you know, her homegirls was right there with her by her side, just talking to her, giving her some emotional support, right? So that's was good things about her, the friend that she had. That, you know, because sometimes, you know, we as human beings, right? Even it doesn't matter if you're young, even when you're older, sometimes you need that support, the family support, all that friendship support, especially when you're actually going through things within your life. So, right, as time has passed, right, her grandmother's stability, Naomi started. You know, sometimes as teenage girls, you know, sometimes, you know, you start rebelling against the person who raised you. Most teenagers, not most, but a lot of teenagers are like that. You know, they're tired of she was tired of her grandmother's rules. You know what I mean? Going to church, listen to her grandmom and stuff like that. So she started to rebel. So Naomi started rebelling against her grandmother. So Naomi begins challenging Ruth's authority and exploring dangerous choices. So she started doing things that, you know, that she shouldn't be doing at such a young age. So as time goes on, right, her identity starts to splinter between potential and pain. So she would still think about her parents at a young age, her parents, and the pain sometimes, you know, because that when losing a parent at such a young age, you know what I mean? Those type of stuff could be with you for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? But at the same time, though, she dreams of, like, greatness, but is still haunted by grief. You know? She, back then, did a lot of black track star that she actually looked up to that she wanted to be like. And Naomi really did her best. Now, with that being said, in this book, I had to pay homage to a track star named Shakira Richardson. If you know the story, back in, I think, 2021, something like that, when the Olympics was going on, during COVID, whatever, and she got kicked off the Olympic team because of marijuana. I did that shit, right? She ended up getting kicked off the track team. Because her couch smell marijuana on her, and she's like, Naomi, you won't be on this track team anymore. I'm gonna call your grandmother. I'm gonna tell your grandmother about what you did. You come to here, you know what I mean? First of all, you've been late to some of these track meets, and you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're not running as fast as you once were, and it's because of this weed smoking that you're doing. So you will no longer be on this track team no more. And I'm going to tell your grandmother, I'm going to let your grandmother know. So that's how it all started spiraling out of control for her. Because track was her thing. She loved doing track. But once she got kicked off the track team, her young mind started to change. Now, we get into chapter 2 now. And Naomi meets a man by the name of Dez. By this time, Naomi is about 16 years old. Right, so there's an older man who lures her into a lavish criminal lifestyle, right? But before she does that, right, when he first met Naomi, one day she was walking home from school and he put up in a nice Cadillac. You know, black people love back in those days, love Cadillacs. And when he was trying to talk to her, she was like, you know, I don't leave him alone. I don't want to deal with you. No, you bad news. I don't want to deal with you. And she just went on her way. Walking home from school, just like in the neighborhood of Langley Park, Maryland, she witnessed with her own eyes somebody getting stabbed. She couldn't believe it. First time she saw somebody being murdered. Second time anyway, besides her parents. Then she saw somebody being murdered on the streets. She witnessed that, wow, it was deep. So as time passed, so a second time, the man, his name is Dez, right? Would be her future baby's father. So Dez tried to talk to her again a second time on another day. And she turned it down again. And then after a while, you know what I mean? Naomi don't forget about Dez. They're still hanging with the homegirls, Layla and Jordan. And then a year had passed. Now she's 17. And her and her grandmother had gotten into it, still smoking the marijuana. Her and her grandmother had gotten to it. And one day she was coming home from school. And who did she meet again? Dez. But this time, it wasn't in a Dagger and Cadillac. It was in a brand new BMW. This was in the 70s now. A brand new BMW. And she loved what she saw. And she's like, take me for a ride. And then guess what? That's how it all began. You know what I mean? This handsome, charming man meeting this young girl. And they started hanging out. So his charm, his confidence, and gifts seduced her into his world, right? So he started showing her lavish style, you know what I'm saying? Giving her things that she had never gotten before, taking her to the nicest restaurants, something she's not used to. You know what I mean? Something she's not used to. But she was loving every minute of it. So Naomi began to start skipping school and drifting from her goals. Now she meet this handsome drug dealer who got money. Now she's poor now. Her grandmother, you know what I'm saying, she grew up poor. And she meets a man who has a lot of money. And she's a young female, and they entice her. Driving, you know what I'm saying, wearing nice clothes. You know what I mean? And as time goes on, right, they started grooming Naomi for leadership by exposing her to street politics. Teaching her all kind of great stuff. I should say things from the streets. As time goes on, you know what I'm saying, their relationship intensifies, both passionate and possessive, right? Possessive. Because he was a little possessive towards her as well. But as time goes on, of course, they end up having a child together. And the child, her son, name is Darius Carter. So her grandmother didn't like that. She hanging out with the drug dealer. So, of course, her grandmom is worried about her. And her grandmother is warning her about the lifestyle that she's living now. But, you know, a teenage girl is very hard-headed. Teenagers, period. Very hard-headed. And she's not going to listen to her grandmom. So after meeting Dez, of course, after time went on, Naomi gradually stopped hanging out with her homegirls, Layla and Jordan, leaving her past friends behind. Now, I'm going to tell you this real quick before I go forward. So when Naomi started smoking weed, it was a homegirl, Layla, that introduced her to the weed. And as time goes on within the story, that's going to be part of the story as well. You know what I mean? Her homegirl, Layla, introduced her to the weed. Remember the name, Layla. Okay? She will be back in future chapters. So after a while, Layla and Jordan, of course, were worried for her, but Naomi cut them off completely, protect her from her new reality. Right? She cut them off. She was like, you know what? No, I don't want to deal with y'all no damn more. You know what I mean? I'm getting tired of y'all keep lecturing me and talking to me and stuff like that. Let me be me, basically. You know what I mean? Because now her head is like this. Because she getting money now. Having nice clothes, jewelry. You know, back in the 80s, you know, they used to wear those big fat gold rope chains, the three-finger rings, the four-finger rings. All the good stuff, right? The young ladies with those big, nice, big earrings back in the 80s. This is how they dressed back then. You know what I mean? Nice clothes, nice cars. You know? Those type of things, when you grow up poor, will entice any young black kid that grew up in the hood. Because back then, a black child didn't have a doctor or a lawyer that they can look up to. They didn't have those type of things back in those days. You know who they had back then? The drug dealers. That's on the corner, destroying the neighborhood, right? That's who they had to look up to. You know what I mean? And that's in every single neighborhood across the United States of America. I don't say every neighborhood, but ghettos across the United States of America. These drug dealers are, they're like ghetto superstars. Because everybody in the neighborhood would know those dagger drug dealers. They're very famous. They're very popular within the neighborhood. And they know, hey, that dude right there, he's not to be messed with. You better leave him alone. Or else you would be pushing up daisies. Seriously. That's how it was back in those days. So Layla was enticed. Naomi Davis. She was enticed because of all the niceness things that she got from Dez. Right? And plus she had a child now and a son to raise. So with her son, she had to be a mother and working for Dez in the drug house. So back in then, right, in the 70s, they were selling heroin, a lot of heroin in the 70s. But once the 80s hit, they graduated from heroin to crack cocaine. Because back in the early 80s, because I remember when crack cocaine started hitting my neighborhood. You know what I mean? I started seeing a lot of people, a lot of drug deals, a lot of guys that was just selling regular weed on the streets. Now we're selling crack cocaine on the streets. And a lot of girls that she knew who was like, oh, that girl's so fine. And guess what? A couple years later, those same girl who was fine started to look like, as they would say, a crackhead. Started looking really bad. You know what I mean? Because of what they call the cocaine crack. So now, the crew and the street name, right? Naomi become known in the streets, and her nickname is the Black Godmother. But I will tell you later on how she get the name the Black Godmother. Okay? She didn't name herself that. Other people name herself that. Right? So Naomi was so smart, right? She helps Dez expand his empire, his drug empire. She gained a lot of respect for her intelligence, her quick decision making, and calm under pressure. She was very calm. You know what I mean? She didn't get mad, nothing like that. Even when she's upset, she's very calm and she's very calculated, very smart. So Dez started giving her a lot of more responsibility in his operation. So they started doing a lot more, taking care of the finances, all the great stuff. Naomi begins adopting street logic as her moral compass. You know what I mean? She's like, you know what though? She started thinking, you know what I'm saying? This is how it's supposed to be, this is how it's gonna be, no matter what. You know what I'm saying? Naomi was becoming big. And no matter how much Dez's crew always big her up in front of Dez, and she knows she's so loyal to her man, she always humble herself. I'm like, you know, this is Dez's operation. I'm just here helping out my man. You know what I'm saying? Because she loved her man. You know what I mean? First of all, Dez was the first man she ever been with, right? She has ever been with. And she loved this man from the bottom of her heart. She'll do anything for Dez. Okay? And they have a child together. So, as time goes on, she started witnessing brutal enforcement tactics, and she adapted quickly. So she see Dez was doing a lot of brutal stuff. And she kept into a mental note, and she started to adapt all those stuff, those type of things real quick. Naomi proves she's not just Dez's girl, but she's also the boss. She is the boss lady of the within the operation. You know what I mean? Dez's crew. No, this is Dez's crew now. That she inherited. this Dennis crew. But guess what though? She still became the boss lady. So she started making, she starts to make independent decisions that elevate her power. You know, we start making stuff, calculated moves. And, you know, and Death didn't have a problem with that. Because along the money was coming in, Death didn't give a damn. Right? Death caught up. He didn't give a damn. So, you know what I'm saying? And after a while, of course, the name, the Black Godmother spreads fear and reverence across the neighborhood, right? So by this time now, she left from Maryland. And then she moved to Washington, D.C., you know what I mean, to really hang with Dez and start to help him to grow his empire. So now in chapter 4, we will talk about Dez's reign. So Dez's empire flourishes as he eliminates rivals and expands his operations. So there, at that time, there were so many rival gangs, crews, I should say, because, you know, in D.C., we didn't say gang. They used to say crews back then. So rival crew members started to challenge Dez. But Dez, with them by his side, they were too smart. Okay? They was too smart. And guess what? They eliminated the competition. So Naomi helps manage, of course, the finances, the product, and the territory shifts. Dez become, so after a while now, you know, I remember Ice Cube used to say, don't get high off your own supply. That's what they started to do. So they started to become paranoid because he thinks somebody in his crew wants to betray him, increasing surveillance and control, right? So he wants to increase the surveillance on people that he doesn't trust anymore. And, yeah, he had every right to worry, though. Because when you reach a certain level within that game, somebody's going to try to take you out. So, of course, Naomi and Dez, their love is intense. Their love is intense but becomes emotional taxing. So, a lot of times, Naomi was telling Dez about his drug use. Man, we got something. You got to stop using that dope. Leave the shit alone. All that stuff, right? So, now he's close to home. So, Naomi starts to see how fragile power is when based on fear. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Dez starting to become paranoid, starting to become fearful, you know, because there's a few times that people try and take him out, but then I'll always get the upper hand. So now after a while, you know, Layla and Jordan, her friends, have disappeared completely from Naomi's life. Naomi had nothing to do with him no more because now she's deep in the dope game. So Layla and Jordan went the separate ways, you know what I mean? When time goes on, we'll see about Layla. So Dez becomes more controlling and protective of Naomi. So Dez, we'll call off, have his paranoia. He started to become a lot more controlling and worried that something's going to happen. Man, I worry my son, you know what I mean, my girl, what's going to happen to them. Because he loves family. He does. He loves his family. And he do anything for his family. Right? So Naomi senses something is coming, but doesn't know from where. So when Naomi senses, like, she feels that somebody within the crew was going to betray Dez. Right? That's how she felt, that somebody in the crew was going to betray him. And she had a feeling who it was. But guess what, though? She had no proof. She didn't know. It was a feeling she had. So now, in chapter 5 now. So after this, right? Dez is killed in an ambush. Devastate Naomi. So now, somebody done murdered or unalived Dez. Now, we wonder, who could this be now to unalive Dez? Right? Who could be the one to unalive him? So after a while, Naomi suppresses her grief and focuses on revenge. She's like, you know what though? Whoever unalived my man, I'm going to get him. And he's going to regret the day he was born. He's going to regret that crap. Kill the man that I love, the father of my child. I'm not having that. there's something that's going to happen, right? So now after Dez got murdered, she steps into Dez's leadership role and eliminates any suspect behind his death, right? So now, let's talk about this for a second. Yeah, and I think right here, this is my favorite part of the book right here. Man, all right? Yeah, you got to read the book because it actually shows this in a descriptive way what happened. So, one day she was at home in her little apartment, drinking her little wine. Because nobody thinks she's a grown woman now. So, drinking her little wine. And once there's a really true right-hand man. No, Naomi's right-hand man. His name was Big Ray, big muscular guy. Big Ray, they call him. They found the person that betrayed Dez in a hotel, more a cheap motel, with some prostitutes. Right? Some prostitutes. They found him. They grab him, beat him up, grab him, and took him to their abandoned warehouse. And then after they hang him up, they tied him up. Dag and Big Ray call Naomi. Right? And the big old car phone. We back in the 80s, they had the car phone with the battery pack. Called up and said, Naomi, we got him. Naomi was like, what? I'll be right there. So she got in a whip, in a car. And drove, you know what I'm saying? Didn't give a damn about the cops. So drove there to the warehouse. And then when she got inside the warehouse, she took the gun without saying a word. She took the gun from Big Ray and went to them, to the guys, and the bam! Unliving right then and there without saying a word. And now the Black Godmother was born. Well, once she did that, the whole crew was shocked, right? Because they were expecting one of them to do the job. They didn't believe that a woman, you know what I mean? She's going to do that. But she did it. And they had to now label her the Black Godmother. Okay. So after a while, you know what I'm saying, time went on, right? That happened, all this that happened. So Ruth is horrified by Naomi's transformation into a cold leader, right? So her grandmother, of course, loved her granddaughter so much. Love her granddaughter, word, right? But one thing with her grandmother, you know, because Naomi had a son. And Naomi did not want to live to raise her son into that world. So she actually let her grandmother raise her son. You know what I mean? And the one thing with her, though, although she lived in that world, whenever every chance she get, she going to visit her grandmother and her son. Just to get some solace and some peace, right? Because even in the book, I still had to humanize her, right? Still a human being, you know what I mean? She's still a loving granddaughter and a loving mother. See what I'm saying? So her grandmother was raising her son, Darius, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you know what I'm saying? After a while, you know, Big Ray, of course, is like her right hand, you know what I mean? The right hand. And she had a lot of crews that she trusted. You know what I mean? Like one guy, I won't tell his name, but I'm a Jamaican, right? So I had to put at least one Jamaican in his book. And the Jamaican guy, he was so loyal. Even when he got caught, you know what I mean? He didn't snitch. You know what I mean? And Naomi showed him respect for that. Respect. He even took care of his damn mama. Because he ain't stitched on nothing. You know, this time I got deported back to Jamaica. That's it. Right? So Naomi restructured the crew for survival, started training the crew, different things, started doing different things. The streets began to call her the queen in whispers and fear, the Black Godmother. And of course, they started coming up with a name, right? So back in those days in Washington, D.C., I have a lot of different rival crews. So normally, the crews that you have were named after the street the block that you live in. Like that, like for example, Park Road. You know what I'm saying? Say M&L, whatever, something like that. You know what I mean? But the name of her crew was the 8th and L Street Crew, right? You know what I mean? Live on 8th Street L intersection. 8th and L Street Crew, they call themselves. Right? And then, you know, in the movie New Jack City, when the part when the guys were like, CMB, Cash Money Brothers, right? I had to think of some kind of motto that they're going to say. So I just made it simple. The money makers. We're the money makers because they're making money. We the money makers. Made all kind of money in the streets of Washington, D.C. So time goes on now. So Naomi, right? Naomi becomes increasingly suspicious of leaks within her operation, right? So now by this time now, and it's in the book, even from the beginning of a chapter, she had a cousin by the name of Shana that, you know what I mean, has two kids. And one time Shana had asked Naomi, please, man, my baby daddy ain't shit. Sorry, but my baby daddy is nothing. I ain't getting no help. I'm broke. I ain't got the money. Can you help me? Can I work for you? And at first, Naomi, I said, nah, I don't think it's a good idea. But after a few tryouts, Naomi gave her a chance and she started working for Naomi, right? So that's what happened. So Naomi, you would get connects in New York. So when Naomi first, after Dad got murdered, got killed, and when Naomi first took over the operation, she had to go to New York to get by her and the crew, and from the Colombians. You're the Colombians for every damn thing when it comes to drugs, right? So from the damn Colombians. So when we went into the warehouse up in New York City, in New York, whatever, and one of them Colombian boss, like, this is a woman. I ain't selling to no woman. But you know what, though? Naomi stood her damn ground, and at the end of the conversation, after that, she got what she came for. She wasn't playing. You know what I mean? They took her lightly because she's a female. But guess what, though? Just because she's a female, that doesn't mean she can't run nothing. You understand me? She was in charge, and she was the boss lady, the black godmother, and the black godmother doesn't play. So, the drug bar, right? So, now, this part right here is very interesting. So now, Naomi decided, Naomi decided to go and get some more dope, some more drugs, buy some more drugs. Right. But she didn't go herself. She sent her crew, right, to go. But what she did, though, she watched from afar with them, binoculars from afar, but nobody could see her. And then guess what? Somebody snitched, right? The same cousin that she hired ended up becoming a state informant because either that or her children was going to be taken away, right? All that's in the book. Okay, so Naomi wasn't there, and even by this time, the police officers did not know that was a woman that was running the operation after Dad got killed, right? Now the whole time they thought it was a man for a long time, right? Except for one of the cops, which we're going to introduce, talk about the cops later on. Okay, so when her crew went to buy the drugs, they got busted. You know what I mean? The cops surrounded the whole area, surrounded it. And then guess what? Out came all of the daggum police car. When she looked in the binoculars and she saw somebody, a figure coming out of the daggum police car, from the back of the police car, and she saw it was Layla dressed up in a nice suit, looking nice. Right, but at first wasn't sure. Was like, so shocked. Was like, that couldn't be the day. I haven't seen Layla in years. No, time has gone. This has been like 10 years now has passed. But I haven't seen Layla in years. And so she actually drove close to where the scene where all the cops and everything was surrounded. And then she looked and she was driving past. And in a matter of split second, her and Layla just locked eyes, just like this. Her stomach just dropped. She's like, what the, huh? I can't believe it. My friend I grew up with, it's now a daggone lawyer, a DA. She could not believe it. She couldn't believe it at all. It's like, oh man, what am I going to do with my family? That's my homegirl. I grew up with her. One time I knew her. Right? But guess what, though? But guess what? Now, the two people race together. Now, one is on the wrong side of the law, and the other is on the good side of the law. That's what makes the book so interesting. Now, the one on the good side of the law, Layla, is going to do her best to take Naomi down, because that's the job as a DA, to take Naomi down. And no matter what, because even the cops, it took them for years for these for them to together. Okay. So Naomi, after a while, Naomi quietly begins to investigate Layla from her trusted rival, calling to find out that Layla is a Dagon DA. She couldn't believe it. So even after when she found out, even her paranoia starts to set in. The plot now starts thickens. And now she started getting high off her own supply. You know what I mean? Called the paranoia even more. That's what made the book so good. Oh, God. The book's so dang good, man. So now, the Black Godmother, right? So after she lost all the dang product, she started rebuilding again, rebuilding the crew with new leaders and tight instructors, even hired some young boys off the streets to help her rebuild her stuff. And that's what she did. Right, she started implementing rules and codes, you know, right, for internal justice. Don't cross me. You know what I mean? Basically, right? She consolidated her power across the neighborhood. Even neighborhood gangs, who are crews, were trying to get her, but they could not get her. They couldn't get her at all. No way. She's too smart for that. Too smart. Plus, she has some good crew behind to have her back as well. Some good people behind, like Big Ray. And other people, you know what I'm saying, within the crew. You know what I mean? And one time, it was in the book, one of the young boys that she hired, man, right, thought she got betrayed. She like, right, thought she got betrayed. Thought he betrayed her. And he ended up unaliving her, or him. She ended up unaliving him. Come to find out, it was one of her trusted lieutenant. You know what I mean? Shana, I was turned state's evidence, but this time, you know what I mean? She knows she couldn't get to Shana because they already had her in witness protection. They couldn't get to her. When she found out that her trusted lieutenant is a damn snitch, like, damn, she's like, Shana got away, my cousin Shana got away, and she's lucky. When she found out, right, because she was paying people off to get information. When she found out that they're going to take this guy to a safe house, somewhere, you know what I mean, to a safe house, to witness protection, guess what she did? She had some boys playing a bomb in the paddy wagon. The two police officers escorting him. Blow the whole thing up. Bam! Bam! It blew up. You know, these cops are mad now. Cops, they are, we gotta get this person. We gotta get this damn person off the street. Killing my cops too? No, man, we can't have that. Right? So that's what happened. So, now let's talk about these two detectives, right? We got Detective Marcus Gray and Angela Perez. So, you know, as an author, as a writer, a lot of these characters, y'all trying to humanize these characters, right? So Detective Marcus Gray, he's a middle-aged man, divorced, you know what I'm saying, with two children. You know, his life just going in shambles. You know what I mean? Paying alimony and child support, all the crazy stuff. Now, Angela Perez, another young detective. No, she's a young detective. And she was moving. She moved real fast. Right? Right? Because she was a B cop. She took the detective exam within a matter of some years. A few years. So by the time she was in her early 20s, she became Detective Angela Perez. And both of them were working together, the old school and the new school detective, right? You know what I mean? And they worked together. But for years, though, they were trying to get Naomi. But they could not get Naomi. I mean, the black godmother. Because they couldn't get her. Okay? So Perez, driven by her own childhood, right, experiences, sees Naomi as both a threat and a reflection of the system's failure. Because even before Perez became a cop, even she grew up poor as well. Hispanic, in a good, great Spanish neighborhood, home, Latin home. You know what I mean? Even when she left New York to come to D.C. for the dagger detective job, she was a single mom, and her parent actually came with her so she could work and focus on her work while her parents helped her to raise her daughter. You know what I mean? So I had to humanize these dagger detective, right? So after a while, Naomi becomes, of course, a lot more paranoid after a while. Trey, think about people betraying her. You know what I mean? Naomi knows the law is coming, but doesn't know how soon, when the law is going to come after her. Okay, so this book went on and talked about a lot of this stuff, right? So after a while, Naomi begins suffering nightmares and emotional burnout because now her son is 15 at this time, and her son is just asking questions about her. Even one time, this one guy called Naomi, a beautiful woman, very beautiful. And this one dude, when she was just walking with her son, right, and they were walking to her car. And the one guy was trying to holler at Naomi, and Naomi wasn't having it. And Naomi like, no, I'm good. And he kept trying, and then he started disrespecting her in front of her son. And this when her son realized how dangerous his own mother was. Naomi got the pistol and just pistol whipped the man, beating him so bad. You know what I mean? And he's like, Darius, get in the car, let's go. And just drove off. Yes. Naomi didn't play. You know what I mean? Naomi didn't play. So as time goes on, different rivals, of course, and betrayals. Again, you know what I mean? Sometimes her stash houses would get raided by police, but she was never there though. But her the drug house a lot of times would get raided. There one time though, a rival drug dealer, a crew, raided her stash house and robbed them. She found out who they was, and you know what she did. Okay. So after a while though, she started forming different alliances just to expand her market. And now, there was this real-life drug dealer back in Washington, D.C., back then. His name was Rayford Edmonds. Found out the man died last year, November. But Rayford Edmonds, right? So, I had to put him in the damn book because, you know what I mean? I live in Maryland. This guy is in D.C. Even in Maryland, I'm hearing about this guy, the king of D.C. At such a young age, 24, 25. Such a young age, everybody knew who Rayford Edmonds was back then. Probably the biggest dope dealer at the time on the East Coast. At the time. Right? So I briefly mentioned him in the book of how Naomi was admiring him from afar. And even when he got caught up, you know what I'm saying? All the good stuff, all this in the book. You know what I mean? So Naomi learns, okay, that her later, her friend, of course, become the damn DA. You know what I mean? Building a case against her. You know what I mean? And even so, she started getting paranoid. So the book really talked about a lot of stuff, right? So Naomi and her son, too, after a while, finally confront years of avoidance. And they talk about a lot of stuff that they should have been talking about. Because Darius Carter, her son, teenage son, asking a lot of questions. But one thing with Naomi, what she did, she set him up for success. She knew probably eventually she's going to get caught. Either she's going to die or she's going to go to jail. But she always made sure her son was straight, no matter what. Her son was straight. So he could have went on to go to college. And that's what he did after a while, you know what I mean? Once you graduate high school, he went to an HBCU, Howard University in DC, you know what I mean? And this man studied law. Okay? So this book talked about a lot of stuff, you know? A lot of great things that's in this book. You know what I mean? But the book is actually available on Amazon. On Amazon, okay? Yeah, so this book talks about a lot of great information, all right? So let's talk about a little stuff about some of these characters now. Like Naomi's duality, right? So Naomi was Naomi a product of her environment, or did she make a conscious choice to embrace power over peace? Huh? What y'all think? Huh? After reading the book. You know what I mean? Was she a product for her environment? Her mom, her grandmother, Ruth's moral compass. Let's explore how Ruth served as Naomi's anchor. Because she was Naomi's anchor. You know what I mean? Naomi's anchor to humanity. Because, you know, Ruth helped raise her son. She had her grandmother back. Her grandmother had her back. You know what I mean? Even Des was not just a lover to her, but as a mentor. But he was a mentor who directed Naomi's life. But imagine if Naomi had never met Des, what she could have been in her life. Because she was very smart. You know what I mean? She was very smart. Now her friend Shana. Shana was she's not just a snitch, right? So the cop said, we got something on you. So if you don't help us, we're going to take your kids away, right? What would you do in that situation? Would you still snitch, knowing that your child or your kids could be taken away by the government? What would you do? So can we empathize or sympathize with Shana? Okay. So now Big Ray, right? Big Ray shifts from Desi's lieutenant to Naomi's protector, because no matter what, Big Ray loved Naomi. Not like that, oh, I'm in love with you. Not that kind of love, but he loved Naomi. You know what I mean? He would do anything for Naomi. Even when he got caught up in anything, nothing, bam. Ran at this damn time. You know what I mean? So with Layla, no, Layla wanted to make Naomi to take Naomi down. Or was she forced to buy her job, right? And her ethics. Because she know, Naomi is my childhood friend. I knew this girl. We grew up together. Although we are separated for years, we haven't seen each other for years. But damn, this is my job, man. I gotta do my job. You know what I mean? And so imagine if you were in that position, you know somebody personally, but no, by law, you have to do the job and take down that person that you know. What would you do within that situation? Huh? Tell me. Okay. So Naomi, was she a villain or was she a visionary? Because even in the neighborhood, she took care of the neighborhood still, right? So, but still, she was still, you know what I mean? She was still killing off the neighborhood at the same time. See what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's so much great things within that book. So that's why I had to talk about this book, right? The Black Godmother. Now, this book right here, Shadows of the Past. This is a sequel to The Black Godmother, right? These two books go on the hand, right? This is about Naomi's life, and this is about her son, Darius Carter, a lawyer, right, in this book. And a lot of scandals, right, that he had to help defend as a lawyer, defense attorney. You know what I mean? I'm talking about scandals from the president's son to so many great stuff, the NRA. You know what I mean? When I wrote this book, I actually used real life scandals that happened in the early 2000s, right? Four scandals that happened in the early 2000s, right? And these scandals have nothing to do with one another. But guess what, though? As an author, sometimes you got to be creative, right? So I tied all four scandals, right? In real life, they're going to have nothing to do with each other. Different times, different year. But guess what? In the book, I tied all four of those scandals together. And Who was pulling the string? Was it the president of the United States that was actually pulling the strings with all four of these scandals? Did the president of the United States throw his own son under the bus? Huh? Tell me. Did he or didn't he? Because in every case that Darius will defend, the president, I was calling Darius to find out what's going on with case and keep asking Darius different questions. Huh? Tell me. I'll tell you, these books right here, both of them are available on Amazon. And these books are really, really good read. If you like action book, crime drama, you know what I mean? All those type of things, you know what I mean? You will love this book right here. I'm telling you, right? You enjoy it. You know what I mean? That is nice, easy read, you know what I mean? Stuff like that, like, damn, wow. Especially if you're a certain age like myself. When we read the book, some of these things probably bring back memories. You know what I mean? We bring back memories, okay? You know, so sometimes as an author, as a writer, sometimes you just have to think outside the box, okay? And with that being said, available on Amazon, please go and purchase them for me. Help support an independent author. That's all I'm asking, please, okay? You know what I mean? Help support an independent author. Because I'm trying right here. I really am trying. And I really appreciate you all for actually tuning in. So thank you for tuning into to Common Ground. Until next time, keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.